crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigal. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, as per usual. Thank you very much to Christopher Eames, who took the show last week. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, I would go back and listen to that for sure and read his accompanying article on Watch Jerusalem about the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, and looking at the evidence to see whether they were written when the Bible says that they were written, whether they were written 3,000 years ago, whether they were written later than that. He goes through some documentable proof for the authorship and the period of the authorship of those books. So I would go back and read that for sure. Today we're going to not talk about archaeology because just the events over the past couple of weeks in the Middle East really necessitate our discussion on a world news topic, and one that you've no doubt heard about quite a lot, and there's been a lot of analysis and commentary on this over the past couple of weeks, and it is referring to what's happening between Iran and Saudi Arabia right now, the larger proxy war that's going on throughout the Middle East. And in relation to that, I want to admonish you as well to listen to or watch a program that we've put up on Watch Jerusalem by our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory. It's entitled Iran, King of the Middle East. Iran, King of the Middle East. Because if you've listened to this program that much, we do focus on Iran. And some of our listeners, or some people have written in and they can't understand why necessarily we focus on Iran so much. Well, the last couple of weeks should be proof enough of why we focus on Iran. Just because every action inside the Middle East right now, it seems, is either an action by Iran or a reaction by other powers. And right now it's between Iran and Saudi Arabia and the different battle spaces for this proxy war being Yemen and Lebanon. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more on this show, and particularly the European angle in it. But before we get to that, I just wanted to admonish you to go back and listen to this program from our editor-in-chief, because he does discuss what we've been saying for the past 20 years about Iran's march across the Middle East. We call Iran the king of the Middle East, not because we want to glorify Iran and the power that it has, but we call it that because that's what the Bible labels this growing Iranian empire as. It calls it the King of the South in Daniel chapter 11, in verse 40. And this chapter in the Bible is really critical for your understanding of end time events in the Middle East and the broader world as well. Particularly the last from verse 40 onwards, where the prophecy jumps to the end time or to the latter days, as it says there in verse 40, and it concerns a number of world powers. And the first power it mentions there is this King of the South. This King of the South, and for 20 years, we've been saying that this King of the South is Iran, or he leads radical Islam. A number of nations are in this alliance. The Bible talks about the nations that are in this alliance led by Iran. And what we're seeing right now in the Middle East is Iran fulfilling that prophecy. Iran pushes, and other nations, whether it be Saudi Arabia, whether it be Israel, react to the belligerent push of Iran, the dangerous push of Iran. And these past couple of weeks, what we've seen is Iran pushing, and Saudi Arabia, its arch enemy in the region, getting upset about it and actually taking some actions into their own hands. Now, this has been a long time coming, it seems, and Saudi Arabia obviously have been looking at what's happened over the past couple of years, probably hoping for a different result in Syria, the Syrian civil war, hoping for Iran to be removed from Syria, hopefully that Iran wouldn't take over Iraq, hopefully looking into Yemen, that the Saudis, after been fighting the Houthis right now in Yemen for 2 years, that they would have done and dusted the Houthis and moved on. And yet that's not what we've seen. We've seen Iran grow in power in Iraq to the point that it's basically taken over Iraq right now already. And then the winding down of the Syrian civil war that puts Iran in with quite a lot of power. And then the war in Yemen, which borders Saudi Arabia on the south, that isn't going away. And over the past couple of weeks, we've seen the Houthis there fire ballistic missiles against the Saudis. They almost hit the international airport there in Riyadh. Very dangerous. It was a couple of Patriot missiles that actually took that ballistic missile down after it had traveled over 600 miles. And the United States State Department and others have noted that that was an Iranian-made missile, that it had Iranian markings on it. And so while this fight takes place in Yemen, it's obviously that Iran is behind it. And the Saudis have basically said, enough, enough. And over the past 2 weeks, they've decided to draw the line in Lebanon. Lebanon being one of the last places that it has to push back against Iranian hegemony. And right now, as it's been the case for the past decade, the strongest power inside Lebanon is Hezbollah, which is an Iranian proxy. No one denies that. Hezbollah doesn't deny that. And it's gotten to the point that Hezbollah is so strong that the Sunni Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, he resigned last Saturday night from Riyadh, basically an indication that he or maybe the Saudis are giving up on Lebanon, or at least showing the world that Iran has taken that nation over. We are not going to allow this game to be played any longer. We're going to show the world that this is Iran's state right now. It's dominated by Hezbollah, and we're going to treat Lebanon for the foreseeable future as a satrapy of the Iranian Empire, as another province of the Iranian Empire, just like Iraq is right now, just like northwestern Yemen is right now, just like Syria is right now. Lebanon is the same, except Lebanon is a little bit different. Lebanon has a very large Sunni population that's been really, that's grown over the past few years because of just the large influx of refugees from Syria that have all basically been Sunnis that are fleeing the fighting there. They've come and they've settled inside Lebanon, which has swelled the Sunni numbers by over a million, really upsetting the delicate sectarian balance that exists in Lebanon. And right now, it looks like Hezbollah wants to send them back, but they're not ready to go back yet because they know they're going to face quite a lot of retribution from the Syrian regime. They don't really have a future there in Syria. Nevertheless, what we're seeing right now is Saudi Arabia telling the world that Iran has taken over Lebanon, and we're going to confront it there. We're going to confront it there. Now, we don't know whether this means a military strike on Lebanon or Hezbollah's positions in southern Lebanon or eastern Lebanon. But what's interesting is Saudi Arabia is drawing its line in the sand there and is asking other world powers, where do you stand? Are you with us or are you with them? That's what it's got down to in the Middle East right now. You largely have two camps. There used to be more. It used to be Israel and the rest. Of course, you had fighting that's been going on between the Arabs and the Persians and between the Arabs for millennia in the Middle East as well. But largely, everyone kind of jumped on board the bandwagon hating on Israel. And now it seems the Israeli position, the Saudi position, that's becoming closer and closer. And the other position, or the other alliance, is this Iranian-led alliance. And Saudi Arabia at this point is asking the world, where do you stand? They already have the support of the United States President Donald Trump. That was his first foreign visit outside the country. It was to Saudi Arabia, second to Israel. And what did he talk about in both locations? He talked about Iran, and he did correctly label Iran as the belligerent power in the Middle East that needed to be stopped. Now, the big question is, what will Europe do? What will Europe do? Now, while commentator after commentator are asking what the United States will do, biblical prophecy is pretty interesting in that it doesn't, at least in the prophecy in the book of Daniel, it doesn't mention the ancient name for the United States. Yes, the United States features in latter-day prophecy. How could it not? It's the most powerful nation ever on this earth. And if you believe, if you want to know who it is, you can request Herbert W. Armstrong's book, United States and Britain in Prophecy. That's available for you for free at Watch Jerusalem. It's a huge, I think it's 180 pages, something like that. Goes into a lot of proof about who the United States is in end time prophecy. Anyhow, there are people that are looking at the United States to act. And up to this point, there's been a lot of words from the Trump campaign or the Trump leadership, the Trump administration, and yet not too many strong actions against Iran. But what will Europe do? Traditionally, over the past, I would say, a couple of decades, you have seen Europe side with Saudi Arabia, side with the Sunnis against Iran ever since the Islamic Revolution in the late 70s in Iran. You've seen the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, the Emiratis. They have been armed to the hilt from Europe and the United States, clearly showing where their allegiance lies. And you've seen in Lebanon, particularly the French, want to support the Lebanese state institutions, including the army, except over the past 5 years, Hezbollah has basically got more control and power than the army, and they've kind of given up on that, or they have done. Whether that will continue, we're not sure. But there does seem to be a growing cautious approach inside Europe to what Iran is doing. And this has actually taken the Iranians by surprise. And we are going to talk about what's been happening over the past couple of weeks inside Europe and see what the Iranians are doing to try and coax the Europeans to come against the United States, to come against the Saudis. And we'll also look at what Bible prophecy actually says Europe will eventually do in this battle between, or in this fight between, the Saudis and the Iranians. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm. Thank you for listening. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. On the second half of today's show, we're going to look at what will Europe's response be to Iran. The world, as I said before the break, is focused on what the Saudi response is going to be, what the United States response is going to be. But Bible prophecy indicates that Europe is going to do more than all of them to check Iran's rise. And this is something that's interesting just because Europe has become heavily invested, or much more heavily invested than they were inside Iran since the nuclear deal got signed. Oh, if it got signed or not, we're not sure even to this point. And anyway, it's in effect. And back in January 2016, it was implemented. And as soon as those booms came down to the Iranian economy, you had European nations lead huge delegations to Tehran to talk about what business ventures they could do. I think Iran's got 70 or 80 million people. This is a wonderful opportunity, monetarily speaking, for Europe to get involved in numerous trade deals. And they did. And now it seems, though, over the past, I would say, a few months, Europe is starting to see that Iran's actions in the Middle East have not been moderated by the nuclear deal. Now, there were a lot of commentators, including us, saying that the nuclear deal wasn't going to moderate Iran, that they were only going to use the money that they got from the United States and from more of these economic deals to fund terrorism across the globe, as they have since then, and to push further across the Middle East to grow their empire. And that's what we've seen happen through Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen, and even in parts of North Africa as well. That's what's happened. And so Europe is starting to wonder whether that was the best deal that they could have gotten. Of course, you have many people in Europe that want the deal to continue. I'm not saying that at all, that they're against the deal completely now at all, and including their representative, their foreign relations representative of the EU, Federica Mogherini. She was in Iran this week preaching at how good the deal is and how wonderful it is. She wrote an op-ed piece earlier this week in the Washington Post as well, and I think I've got a couple of quotes from that. She said this deal is not based on trust. It is based on the most intrusive monitoring regime ever set up in history. That's what she's saying about the nuclear deal. And I think that's funny. That's just a quote, really, from the former Secretary of State, John Kerry. It's a quote that you'll see posted all over the internet because people mock it because they know it's not true. They know there's no inspections by the Atomic Energy Agency of the military sites inside Iran. They wouldn't let them, the Iranians wouldn't let the IAEA inspectors do that. That's not even in the deal. And so, no, it's not. No, it's not the most, what did she say here, the most intrusive monitoring regime ever set up in history. Nevertheless, she still backs up this deal and says it is wonderful and we need to keep it. This is what she says at the end. This is again in the Washington Post from this week. The Iran deal has been designed to address one thing only, the Iranian nuclear issue. That is the letter and the spirit of the deal. Nobody, neither Europe nor the United States, will be in a better situation without it in place. Undermining the deal would only make the whole world a much more dangerous place. Well, I would say right now, living in the Middle East, that it's a dangerous place, that the world got more dangerous after the nuclear deal. There has been 6,000 years of the history of man where war has broken out without nuclear weapons. And that's been pretty dangerous. And nuclear deal aside, or whether it would stop the Iranian regime from getting a nuclear weapon or not, the world has become a far more dangerous place since this nuclear deal was enacted. And then she says here to conclude, let's join forces to preserve it for the benefit of our citizens. Now, this is written in the Washington Post. She was recently in the United States, and she was trying to beseech the administration in the United States to hold up the nuclear deal, to make sure it would continue. Well, we know that Mr. Trump has certified it, and it's going before Congress. We'll see what happens there. But there are others inside Europe that are wondering whether the nuclear deal was the best idea, whether we need to add things to it, and whether this deal is going to contain Iran, and whether Europe itself is at threat from Iran's movements. A couple of weeks ago, there was an editorial piece in the Wall Street Journal, and it was entitled Europe's Iranian Moment of Truth. And this was October 18th. And I'll just quote from it right now, because it shows you the stakes that Europe has in the Iranian nuclear deal and whether they would want it to continue or not. It says, Europeans embrace the deal. This is by the editorial board, so it doesn't have an author. Europeans embraced the deal even before the final agreement was signed in 2015. Business trips to Tehran started under the pre-2015 interim agreement, and France opened Europe's first trade office in the Iranian capital barely 2 months after the deal was struck. Airbus has agreed to sell billions of euros worth of commercial planes to Iran. Germany's chemical and machine tools industries have cashed in with deals. French and German automakers have signed agreements to export cars to Iran or make them there, and oil and gas companies across Europe are piling in. So they went all in. They saw it as Iran as a cash cow that they were going to benefit from once the sanctions came down. Then this article continues. Further down it says, the question for Europe is whether to double down on its investment of political capital and its own credibility in a deal Washington increasingly scorns and whose spirit Tehran habitually violates. The main transatlantic crisis that could emerge will be if London, Paris, and Berlin, the three EU governments that co-signed the 2015 deal, conclude that business interests with Tehran are more important than helping Washington enforce counter-proliferation measures. So that's the calculus that they're going through right now. 2 years ago, they thought, the Europeans did, it's more important for us to have the business deals. And we'll see if this deal the nuclear deal does stop Iran's rise. It hasn't happened. It's obvious to the European nations. It might not be obvious to Federica Mogherini, but I reckon her days are numbered. Her days are numbered for sure from what you see coming out of other European capitals. They don't necessarily agree with her that even if they want to keep the nuclear deal, it needs to be renegotiated. Parts of it need to be added to it. They need to hold Iran accountable for what it's doing across the Middle East. But again, they've got money invested. This was from yesterday. Europe, this is from, I think, an Azerbaijani paper. It's just commenting here that Europe is the destination for 37% of Iran's oil exports right now. So they're getting the oil from Iran. They also get a lot from Saudi Arabia. So they've got to make up their minds. They have a decision. Do we ostensibly fund the Iranian takeover of the Middle East by continuing to work with Iran, or do we decide to say no? Do we decide to say no? Now, Iran is worried. Iran is worried that they might actually try and curb some of Iran's actions in the Middle East. Of course, Europe wants to continue the business ventures, but Iran's worried that Europe is going to say, well, you need to just back off a little bit. We don't like what you're doing around the Middle East. We don't like what you're doing in Yemen. We don't like what you're doing in Lebanon in particular. And where were the Saudis in this one? At least that's what some European leaders, particularly the French, and even possibly the German governments, are indicating. Now, when Mogherini visited Iran this week, there was an outcry by the foreign minister, Zarif. He's the one that negotiated the deal for the Iranians. There was an outcry from him to ensure that the EU play a more active role at implementing the JCPOA, or the nuclear deal, and take practical actions in this regard. You're not doing enough. And you need to stand up to the United States. He said that elsewhere. That's what the Ayatollah said back in October, if I remember correctly, that he called on Europe. He called on Europe to stand up to the United States and follow through on the deal. Now, there was a piece in Forbes. This was from November 10th, a couple of days ago. And it's entitled, How Iran is Losing Europe. Now, Iran recognizes this shift in Europe. It's concerned. And it has come about because of what Iran's doing in the Middle East. They're pushing through the Middle East. And it looks like European nations are wondering whether a relationship with Iran is the best thing. I'll just quote the first paragraph here. As the United States adopts new strategy vis-a-vis Iran, senior officials in Tehran are desperately seeking a new life rope. With Obama and his appeasement gone, Iran is also sensing how Europe is distancing. Europe is getting further and further away from Iran. That's interesting. And it has to do with mainly what Iran is doing in Lebanon, what Iran is doing in Syria, what Iran is doing in Yemen, and its increasing production of ballistic missiles and its growing technology there, because Europe is under threat. Europe is under threat from those ballistic missiles. And there are a number of newspapers inside Europe that are starting to grow wary and cautious about Europe's relationship with Iran. With our parent magazine, we have a news watcher of the German media. He's a native German, and he gives a collection of German news each week to our editorial staff. And he wrote this week that he's seen a pretty dramatic uptick in reports through Germany about Iran, showing that the populace is getting worried about Iran. And this is one from Spiegel, one of their largest magazines. It's entitled Fight for Supremacy, Iran's Dangerous Triumph. And this is what it says. The Iranian leadership cleverly builds new alliances, strengthens foreign militias, and aggressively enforces their interests. The regional power destabilizes the entire Middle East. This is from Spiegel. And then it writes, for a long time, Iran's leadership has sought to reestablish the country as the regional power and thus strengthen the power of the Shiites in the Islamic community. Over the past few weeks and months, they're noticing what Iran is doing. Over the past few weeks and months, Iran has succeeded in asserting its interests and strengthening its positions despite international sanctions, which, in spite of the nuclear agreement that was signed 2 years ago, are partially enforced. So they're saying some of those sanctions are still in force, and look what Iran is doing. And this is what they're doing. It runs through the list. Talks about the $30 billion energy deal that it just signed with Vladimir Putin. Then it says the Iraqi government is under the influence of Iran. It says Iran has asserted itself politically and militarily in Iraq. Together with Russia, Iran has asserted itself in Syria and secured its interests militarily in Syria. Iran is present, it continues, in almost all capitals of the neighboring Arab states with Shiite militias, or is supporting them, some open, some secretly. And then it says, in Lebanon, Prime Minister Saad Hariri resigned and accused the Shiite Hezbollah militia of seeking his life. He just announced his resignation in the Saudi capital Riyadh, as we talked about earlier. And so this is interesting and critical to watch Germany's response to Iran. And if some of the newspapers start talking about it, you can tell that some of the politicians will have to be bring what Iran's doing into the national discourse. They're going to have to talk about it. Bible prophecy indicates that Germany is actually going to be the lead nation that counters Iran's rise. That's why I'm reporting on it on this episode of Watch Jerusalem for you. Now, while Germany itself hasn't really done too much apart from a couple of newspaper articles, their foreign ministry spokeswoman, that she issued a statement, and she's basically said that they are backing up what Saudi Arabia is doing. She says, quote, Germany shares Saudi Arabia's concerns about Iran's interference in Yemen and its support for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and the Lebanese group Hezbollah. We share Saudi Arabia's concern. No, we're not with you, Iran, on this. We're worried as well. We share their concern. Then also, you had just earlier this week, a surprise visit by the French president to Saudi Arabia when all this started to flare up. And what did he do on Thursday? This is what he said. I believe he darted to Dubai at the same time in the UAE. He said that he was very concerned by Iran's ballistic missile program. Very concerned. And he says, there are negotiations we need to start on Iran's ballistic missiles. He said, we're not going to let you do this anymore. We need to start negotiations to get you to stop. Get you to stop the production of these ballistic missiles and the firing of them. The Iranians didn't take too nicely to that. This is what the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said. France is fully aware of our country's firm position that Iran's defense affairs are not negotiable. We have told French officials repeatedly that the nuclear deal is not negotiable and other issues will not be allowed to be added to it. That's Iran's response. I think this is interesting. You have a European nation, the French, who a lot of the time do lead Europe in the post-World War II years in military action whenever they get together, whether it be in North Africa or elsewhere. The French often lead that, and then the Germans are there right behind them. Of course, that is slowly changing. And yet here we have the French president. When this is flaring up in Lebanon, between Iran and Saudi Arabia, this proxy war, and the Lebanese Saudi citizen Hariri resigns, you don't see the French prime minister going to Iran, or the French president, sorry, going to Iran. You see the French president going to Saudi Arabia. Again, why? Because they side with Saudi Arabia against Iran, and they're going to start putting demands on Iran. Now, this is definitely something to watch for. And something that I feel, even though it's only beginning right now, as far as Europe's awareness and response to Iran, even though we only see tiny little instances of that right now, I wanted to bring it to your attention right now. Because Bible prophecy indicates that it is Europe that is going to counter Iran's rise. It's a Europe that's allied with Middle Eastern states. It is going to be allied with Saudi Arabia. It's going to be allied with Jordan. It's going to be allied with Turkey. And believe it or not, it's going to be allied with Lebanon and Syria, nations which Iran looks to completely dominate at this time. And yet, it looks like Saudi Arabia is drawing the line with Lebanon. And will Europe respond? This is an area that traditionally has been under European governance. It used to be a French colony. And that's why the French is so involved right now. The French do agree that Lebanon's sovereignty needs to be protected. And what is it? That's what they said. That's what the French Prime Minister President said when he was down in Saudi Arabia last week. He said the sovereignty needs to be protected. And what does that mean? Well, there's the outside power that dominates Lebanon right now, that's Iran. And so that's why we're watching this. We want your attention to be on Europe's reaction to Iran. Bible prophecy indicates in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40 that it is a European group of nations led by Germany that actually defeats Iran after Iran pushes at Europe. And the King of the South there, as it mentions, it has a foreign policy that's dominated by a lot of push, or that features a lot of push. And as I said at the beginning right now, you can see this prophecy coming true every single day in the news. In the Middle East, Iran pushes and the rest of the Middle East reacts. And soon Iran is going to push at Europe. And Europe is going to have a reaction that Iran does not see coming. Europe will end up moving extremely fast to put down Iranian rebellion. And so if you want to read up more about this, please request our booklet, King of the South. We've had a number of requests from Israel for this book over the past week. It is going to really help you understand the events that are soon to take place here in the Middle East. And it will show you the hopeful conclusion to it all as well. So please do request that book, King of the South. Thanks very much for listening today. That's all we have time for. If you want to send some feedback to me, you can write to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening today. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.